AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's your boys back again. The 1973 podcast. So much to talk about this week. We were wasting time talking before we were recording. So let's get deep in the weeds. Let's get rolling. So Edward, everybody knows the rules. Let's start us off.
Hey there, podcast fans. You ready to show off your love for the 1973 podcast? We got over 20 different designs of t-shirts and hoodies that capture the essence of classic stuff. Whether you're a fan of the show or just love that retro feel, we've got something for everyone. From bold prints to subtle nods to your favorite personalities, each piece is made with top-notch quality and timeless in that timeless style you create. Perfect for lounging at home or making a statement out and about. And don't wait, our collection is flying off the shelves. Fast thing you can say, don't be cheap, buy a shirt. Visit us now at bonfire.com and grab your favorites before they're gone. And check us out at the 1973 Podcast T-Shirt Store on YouTube. Just click the link below.
All right, Edward, we're going to get deep in the weeds with one watch. Everybody knows the rules. So the pick this week came from Bradford, and we're going to start with Brad. Brad, tell us what you pick. Bring everybody up to speed, and we're going to hit the ground running with this one.
So I heard a lot about this movie called Long Legs. I'm a huge, huge horror buff. I love a good scary movie. Basically, it blew up on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Everybody was saying what an incredibly like scary movie it was. Matter of fact, as we're doing this, I'm watching a preview on IMDb, and they're like, masterpiece, mesmerizing, scariest movie of the year. Haven't seen a movie like this since Silence of the Lambs, and I'm like, hold up. All right, let's not get carried away. It was good. I felt victim to the hype. So when I went into this, I was literally on the edge of my seat for the entire movie, waiting for like to happen, and like it never did. And I kind of came away from the movie just extremely let down. It's like they took Silence of the Lambs, Zodiac, Seven. First of all, I didn't even know it was going to be a procedural, like, detective serial killer drama. I went into this movie completely blind. There's even, like, a scary haunted doll in the movie. So, like, they took a lot of different movies that have already been done, and they kind of blended them all in. And then at the very end, they threw in some Hail Satan, satanic worship to, like, just to polish it off, you know? It the little bit of Charles Manson-esque murders kind of, you know, weaved into it is also kind of predictable. I think I have a sixth sense with movies. Like, Jess hates watching movies with me because I'll figure that shit out in like the first 20 or 30 minutes, and then the rest of the movie, you know, I got to keep it to myself. I blurt it out, then it ruins it for her. I kind of figured out the mom and her were the ones in the beginning, and that. So, I mean, I made my bed. I had to lay in it. I ruined it for myself. Nicolas Cage was the creep factor off the charts. The when he said, "I have my long legs on," I was like, oh, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Super weird. Super weird. The rest of the movie didn't do it for me, man. Like, I'm harder on the scary movies than I am other movies. This one just didn't do it. I give it a 6.5. Can't go any higher. And I refuse to. 6.5.
And one watch. Everybody knows the rules. Take it.
I thought it mirrored Silence of the Lambs. The thing about, you know, the long legs piece, it's because, you know, to little kids, he looks like he has super long legs. I mean, you know, I really didn't particularly enjoy it. I'd have to say probably one of the worst movies I've seen in quite some time. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Ooh, Solid straight five from young Edward. I'm going to jump on this one. So, Brad, with you going first, you took a lot of my banter because it's a copycat movie. When we talk things that I enjoy, one thing I will not watch is I won't watch any PG-13 horror movies because they leave out what I think makes a good horror movie. And I will not watch any PG-13 comedies because they just don't bring the good comedy. So that's a baseline. So when I saw the Long Legs hype, I said, "Oh, at least it's rated R. That's something I want to watch. Maybe there's something to it. Maybe it's a sleeper, something that'll, come out of nowhere that not a lot of people had seen." Wrong, wrong again. Duped, duped by social media. The hype was more than the movie. Nicolas Cage, I was expecting more out of it, and people ruined the surprise of the character before I even got a chance to get into the weeds with it. So thank you for spoiler social media. So for Long Legs, as much as I'd like to rant about this movie, Brad, you picked 6-5. I had 6-6 written down. So great minds think alike. 6-6, Thomas. You're up. One watch.
All right. This might be the worst movie I've seen since I was I can't even think of the name of the movie. This would have been something I would have walked out on because number one, I'm not a huge horror fan anyway. This one didn't disappoint, but the director, Osgood Perkins, just couldn't decide whether or not he wanted to do a horror movie or like Brad said, a procedural like thriller. I mean, he kind of kept going back and forth. He needed to decide one way or the other. The first hour wasn't too bad. The second half of the movie I thought was terrible. Nicolas Cage was his usual freaking weird self. The girl that played the detective, Marika Monroe, or whatever her name is, and I don't know if she was going for autistic detective or what, but she nailed that thing. She was there was something about her that irritated me the whole movie.
Don't like autistic
So you've never met my family. My wife is borderline autistic. I'm gonna go. Ed, you went with a five, and I think that's too high. I'm going with a four.
Oh, oh,
Thank you,
not
Thomas.
even.
I thought I was going to get nailed for saying five.
Tom,
So thank you for coming in lower. Thank you, Tom.
not even a 4-1. It's solid.
No.
You're like solid four, solid
I wanted to
five.
make sure that the guy never does another movie like that, another horror
Yeah. You
movie
know,
like that.
I'm gonna interject here. This reminds me of one of Dave Portnoy's reviews of New York Pizza, where he gives it a 0.01. I mean, if this was pizza, this is like, $1 pizza. School pizza is better than this.
All right, Phantom, one watch, long legs.
You guys pretty much covered it all. I was kind of the opposite of Tom. I'm like through the whole beginning of it. Any these guys all know me, Brad. Not so much as far as my movie watching goes. I can't believe I didn't fall asleep. I think I kept waiting for the page to turn and it actually kept my attention because
Yeah.
I'm the opposite of Tom. The whole first half of the movie, I'm like, this thing's terrible. Like I'm waiting for like, give me the reveal. Like what? And then finally, when they did, when it was the dolls and he was making them and the dolls were, man, not too bad. Like that part, I thought was all right. I think they could have got to it way earlier than what it did. It didn't need to be a secret. But yeah, this movie was terrible. I'm going. I can't let Tom outdo me. I gotta go 3.9. That's like
It's like the price.
unwatchable.
It's like the Price is Right. You just stole the score at
Oh
the end.
not a fan, but I do like the concept of watching something different. So that part was awesome. So I don't want to take away from that aspect of it. But man, you picked a
No, I'm sorry. I got
shitty
duped. I think social media, this is what they do now, though. Studios will get influencers and people to start posting about it and pay them for these bogus reviews. And then we all get duped to go watch a shitty fucking movie,
I actually never heard of it before.
man.
Yeah, no. So I can't even say that I had at least a little bit of, ooh, what's this all about?
At least we paid for it. I think our other two cohorts who usually do this, Darren and Shaggy, I don't think they, I think they were too cheap to pay the $2 and whatever it was to actually watch this because they never sent in a score. So,
you know what's funny?
I have good, under good authority, Shaggy said, I didn't watch the stupid movie.
Hopefully they didn't watch it. Spare them.
Listen, Thomas, before you reveal the score, the $2.99 is not bad because that's way cheaper than going to the movies. So it's yeah. not, and you can, if it sucks, you can watch it in the comfort of your own home.
I'd have been pissed if I paid $12 to go see this, plus at the theater. I'd have been pissed.
The popcorn was worth more than this movie.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies that 2 seconds after you're done watching it, you hurry up and try to email wherever you bought it from and say that I bought it by accident and that you can you get your money back?
Yeah.
Thomas, what do we got for a score on this?
5.2.
Damn. 5.2.
That's not right, Brad, because it gets boring when we all pick movies that we all give eights to, so.
IMDb has it as a 6.6. So we're not that far off. We're not that far off.
Six. Oh.
That's what I gave it, a 6.6.
Yeah.
Because I know there's crap worse to come.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oof. Oh yeah. I'm gonna pick some doozies.
Now I know what the standard is. I can go deep into the vaults.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick some doozies. So get ready.
All right. So
I don't know if anybody noticed, but Youngblood has been on TV lately, just so you know.
You know why? Because we hyped it.
Yeah. We gave it the bump.
We gave it a bump.
Gave it the bump.
Speaking of one watch, everybody knows the rules. Homework for next week from the Phantom. Your pick is
go Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
Ooh. Fantastic. Fantastic. I love it.
Excellent.
Yes. That is good stuff. You didn't even, you're batting out of order, but that's okay. It's like a rogue 10. Not going in order with the franchise, but we'll take it. So we're going to put a pin in this week's One Watch. Everybody knows the rules. And we're going to switch over to a subject that I want to talk about, some wrestling. Now, Dark Side of the Ring, we're going to, episode one of the new season is coming out this week. We'll start premiering that, talking about episode one. I believe it's Hell in the Cell next week. So, Ed, get your DVR ready.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
See, I like this stuff, man. I do. I like watching this stuff. This is good stuff.
Yeah, I saw a commercial for. Oh, go ahead, Ed. I saw a commercial for, and I think it's about Mick Foley in the Hell in the Cell. I don't know if it's about Hell in the Cell. They had like Mick Foley before the Hell in the Cell part. So unless it was just maybe a clip that I saw, but I think it's exclusively with him.
Okay. Well, I'm intrigued to watch as a historian of the wrestling business. I like to do deep dives on those and call out the stuff that they didn't do versus the stuff that they should have done. So let's talk Jon Moxley. I saw this clip. I did not watch the episode. It was on a regular episode, I believe, right?
Regular Dynamite.
TV. I thoughts on this? Let's get into the psychology of this. This is let's start with the professor. Thomas, tell us what you thought of how Bush League AEW is.
First of all, it makes him look minor league. Makes him look like back when we were younger, this is stuff that like that CZW used to do with the death type matches that they used to do. And if you're going to do it, don't waste it on TV for a regular match. Do it like whatever their WrestleMania is. I don't even know what their biggest pay-per-view is, but save it for that, for a big moment. Don't just do it. I don't know if it was like, if it was pulled off wrong where it wasn't supposed to be as bad as it was, and it just, that's how it worked out. If he was supposed to pull back his a little bit, like tense his back up when it happened or what, but it just makes them look like they're desperate for ratings to me.
Hot shot in the territory, as they used to say back in the day. Now, before I get to the rest of the panel, because I love your input, I said it, this is the closest they've come. Somebody's going to end up getting either really seriously hurt in that promotion, or somebody's going to kick the bucket. It's just they push the envelope. It's too much. There's not, once you do things like that, it makes the other stuff not mean as much. Ed, thoughts on the spikes in the back?
I think it's ridiculous. I really do. It doesn't tell it. It doesn't enhance any part of the story. And it all goes back to, I mean, if you're going to do something like that where it's going to be something crazy, do it as a blow off. Like, do it on a pay-per-view. Make some money off of it. I mean, that could really have gone bad. I mean, if that was 3 inches to the left, that could go right into his spine. The dude could be paralyzed for the rest of his life if that went in there like that for real. And, you know, I mean, AEW is on this downward spiral, like, you know, going down the toilet. And, you know, if you have to do that on regular TV to try to grab ratings, get some better talent writers. You know, I mean, look, there's five guys right here. You could put us on a plane. We could come up with something better. Just saying. Tony Khan, we're here, baby. We're here, you know.
Big man. You know, before I get to the Phantom and Brad, there is a rule that I haven't heard in a long time with the wrestling booking, that it's the 7-year window, supposedly, of an angle where you can do it again. And the older fans have kind of either aged out or whatever, and newer fans are there and they don't remember the angle. Just, you can't do it exactly, but, you know, but I think they need to watch some vintage wrestling on maybe YouTube or the Peacock deep dive into the WWE library.
I mean, I mean, here's the other thing. I mean, what are you going to do the next time? Like, hit him with a real shovel? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, like, seriously, somebody's really going to get really hurt.
Even that stuff looks phony, though, because when they use the sledgehammer, you got the hard part. You hit them with the either the bottom of it or you cover the top. Why even use the sledgehammer? If you really got hit with something, if we're telling a real story, you get hit with a bat, you're out for one. Well, that's it. You're done.
Yeah, you're done.
And I mean, so you got to.
Same promotion. Basically, they can do the same finishing move like 15 times and the guy doesn't get
that. Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about here.
Outlaw the pile driver. Let's go back with that theory. That's always one of the best angles ever. Outlaw and the pile driver. Phantom, Moxley, let's go.
I mean, it's I'll just play devil's advocate for this one because I think you guys are all going the same way with it. Maybe this is the only chance they got to make their promotion the alternative to WWE. WWE seems to be trying to hold on to that PG style wrestling, and maybe they feel like that's their only way to go the other way. They had the other women's match with all the blood. Now they have this match with Edge and him. Maybe they're going the hardcore route. Maybe they think that if they go that way, that they could brand theirs as like we're more extreme, or you know, go back to the old days with the ECW stuff, and maybe they can find their audience with it. It's as far as the injury part of it was wild, like just to watch. So I'm kind of curious to how many people are going to tune in now, just because now they've had this already 2 weeks in a row of blood. And you know, we grew up with blood and wrestling, but how about the kids? Like, say the people that are younger, they grew up through this PG era. They've never really seen this kind of this blood and stuff like we have. Maybe that's gonna grab them on like we were when we were kids and we were watching NWA and they were bleeding like crazy and we thought it was awesome. So they might be onto something. You know, what else can they really do? It's a sinking ship, it seems to me. So when they tried to pull that thing out of his back, I was like, holy shit, this like that to me, I think it's like 100% total accident. But then there's another part of me, it's like, yeah, you know, like legit, like wrestling with a bat with like freaking nails sticking out of it, and you're gonna get slammed on. Like, where's the gimmick nails?
let's shift gears to the youngest member of the group. The golden age of wrestling was the Attitude Era for this man. Bradford, thoughts on Moxley?
That was a very brutal spot. Like, I'm not mad at it. One of the things that I liked about AEW back in the day was instead, before I really understood like how to make money with wrestling, I appreciated spots like that happening on just a regular, you know, Wednesday night, Tuesday night, whatever. I think it's on Wednesdays, right?
Yep.
And now I'm like, damn, yeah, like you should save that for a pay-per-view. Get people to pay for it so you make some money so we sustain the competition. So when there's competition, we have a better product from both sides, WWE and AEW. Brutal spot. I'm not mad at it. Wasn't a super big fan. I will say I sent this to a couple of y'all. NXT viewership this past week was 676,000. AEW viewership, you know, with that brutal baseball bat of nails in the Mox's back, was only at 658. So they're not even beating NXT, bro. And I love it, NXT, but NXT can be corny as hell sometimes. And you can't be NXT with a bloody bat. Bro, y'all got to go back to the drawing board, man. Back to basics, man. Like, AEW fans are going to come for me in the comments. I know, man. But, like, go back to the basics. Like, this ain't it, man.
Brad, the thing I think that – look at the two psychologies of this. So, say you got that 650 number for both groups. So, AEW's been – their average in their – hype was 850,000. They've dropped 200,000 fans off of their initial big part in year three or year four around there. So what's the hype between the two? Look at the psychology of these two numbers. NXT, people are watching to see if there's going to be any surprises with crossovers from TNA. You get AEW and they just have that little niche juggalo audience that just wants to see blood and guts, you know, to the extreme, or it's not even the ECW style audience anymore. It's just like, you know, that little Grateful Dead type audience that follows them regardless, no matter what. So, I mean, look at, as corny as it is, at least there's some element of surprise that somebody could show up. Nobody's surprisingly showing up in AEW because they announce it before it happens. It ruins the freaking surprise. WWE just signed Rey Fénix, so he's going to be going there. I mean, anybody that was a quality draw in AEW is now gone. And like I was telling Tom before we went on the air, is Hall of Fame worthy as Edge's career is? Some of these guys cannot book themselves. They cannot write their own stuff. Jericho cannot write his own stuff. Edge cannot write his own stuff because they get drawn into bad storylines and stick to the wrestling. Let somebody else do your stories for you. You're not, I mean, guys like Dusty Rhodes or Terry Funk, those guys could lay out their own storylines. Those guys aren't built for that. They're good in the ring, but they cannot book their own stuff. Like when they go up to Tony Khan and say, "Hey, I got an idea," he should say, "What are you, crazy?" He probably can't say no because he doesn't want to lose their star power and them to go, "Oh man, this guy's telling me no." Vince never, you know, comparing him to Vince or blah, blah, blah. So speaking of WWE, did anybody see the John Cena angle this past week? Thoughts on the John Cena angle? Somebody want to take that one?
I'll jump in. I don't know. I had a lot of the stuff that I saw on social media was like, they're like, "This was one of the greatest promos of all time." I didn't think it was that great, to be honest. I guess you kind of, the only thing that was funny was the kid in the front row telling, yelling Cena, "I love you, I love you." And then part of his promo was like, he shits on all the people with the Cena stuff on. That was fantastic. But other than that, I was like, I wanted a new look from Cena, but then when he kind of came out with like, "I'm not changing for you guys," it's kind of cool. I get that pop, but he didn't really get into the stuff with The Rock. That's I want to see that, what that connection's all about. Not just I turned because of the fans, but everybody else seemed to love it. So I think I might be in the minority with, I thought it could have been so much better.
Brad, you want to hit that one?
Yeah, it was good. It was a little long-winded. I think when they get on Raw and they give these superstars like The Rock or Cena the mic, they will talk, man. And I'm like, somebody's got to be over there with a wrap it up box, like hitting the button because they wound up having to cut Jey Uso's match short because Cena talked too long. It was a good promo. I don't think he's going to go down as like memorable. I would have liked when he was like, even that kid over there, I would have liked him to be more aggressive or insulting. Cause even it's John Cena though. Like it's like when you're 10 years old and you say the F word for the first time, like it wasn't. Now what I want to see is I want to see him come out and do some Thugonomics and start rapping and roasting some fools again. I want to see that. But
you, Brad.
Yeah, but he comes out and he's still got the same tired jean shorts, oversized t-shirt, the same weird baseball cap that he just, man, he bends the bill. Oh, God bless. Like the same towel. Yeah, dude. Like he wraps that bill around, dude. And I don't know, dude. Like, come on, give us something, man. Give us something. Give us something, John. Come on.
Now, I would have been happier if he would have came out and went back to the Thugonomics thing, saying like all this time that that's like his real personality, and they've been making him be like straight edge for the kids. Yeah. That's really what he really is, and that's been awesome.
Bro, drop a new single on Spotify. That'll push him over the top, bro.
Hey, I want to ask the professor a question about The Rock. Is it true that he's gone from WrestleMania, or is that just...
I don't know, but it would make sense if Cena didn't mention him at all in the promo. I think he's like pretty much holding... The Rock's pretty much holding them hostage right now because this story... He kind of screwed up the whole Bloodline storyline. I mean, they don't have any idea what they're doing now with Solo Sikoa and... Fatu, and now it's with Cena and this, he's just like splintered out now, and they need somebody to actually stand up to him. I mean, granted, he's the president of TKO or not, but Triple H or somebody needs to tell him pick one, or I think he'd gain the respect of the wrestlers too, because I think they may not say it, but I think it pisses them off because it, like Brad said, it screws everything up with timing and it messed up Jey Uso's match. I mean, it just all splinters out because of that.
You nailed that one, Tom. They're like, they went all that way. Jey Uso was like going to the moon, and then they announced that he's going to be in that world title match, and then now they ain't doing shit with him. To me, he's already getting stale, and he hasn't even got the belt yet. Yeah, if they're even going to give it to him now.
And then he had that horrible botch on Monday night. Yeah. It's not helping his case, bro.
he ain't getting by on his wrestling, Brad.
No.
He's only getting by with all of this. And
we got to keep this going.
If he starts losing that, forget about it, because he's got three moves and they don't all hurt.
I told you, he's the modern day like Jimmy Valiant. He's got that hype like that, and you know if you know Jimmy Valiant from the heyday, you know he was the guy that you know he was your intercontinental level, never main event guy. He was the guy that was just, you know, laughing and joking, three moves, and, you know, they all looked, you know, pretty weak, but it was entertaining for the kids. So there's something else I was going to bring up about the wrestling. Oh, little tidbit before we move on this week. The professor brought maybe a spoiler alert. Next person they're talking about putting in the Hall of Fame, one of the Phantom's all-time favorite wrestlers, the Ugandan Giant, Kamala. Oh. If it's true, Phantom, what do you think? Ed, Kamala?
I mean, no. Entertaining, Hall of Fame, no. Entertaining, yes. You know?
Smacking his belly is entertaining?
No, I mean,
might as well put in repeat, at least he slaps his ass.
He entertained and never spoke a word.
Yeah. I mean, you think, who did he have? He had what, Mr. Fiji, right?
No.
No?
Friday.
No, he had Friday. Friday. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, no Hall of Fame. No way.
Ryan, I want to tell you, Rikishi is in the Hall of Fame.
Shouldn't be, but that's okay.
Another thing that I read that I don't know if this will lead to a Hall of Fame induction, but they just signed Mark Henry to a Legends deal.
Oh, so he's not AEW anymore?
No.
He does a lot with WWE, like their little side project TV shows on A&E and stuff, and DJing WWE themed nightclubs and shit like that.
He does Busted Open too with Bubba Ray and those guys too. So
yeah. One last wrestling thing. I don't know. I just forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. I forgot what I was going to say. Don't get old. Oh, I know what it was. Lex Luger was on the radio, and he was asked who he wants to induct him into the Hall of Fame, and he said he wants two. He says he doesn't know if it's possible, but he wants DDP and Sting.
Yep.
Gotta be Sting.
It's gotta be Sting. Especially where he's retired officially now, they gotta have him. They gotta bring him in.
Did you see the thing with DDP getting Abdullah the Butcher out of a wheelchair too?
Yeah.
You should stop being the Make-A-Wish guy now the Cena's out.
Bro, I've said it before. There needs to be a documentary on Diamond Dallas Page and how he has helped all these wrestlers, man. Because who was it? Scott Hall. Jake the Snake was the original.
Yeah.
He got him out of drugs, depression, all of it. And Jake the Snake is a functioning member of society now because of DDP. Lex Luger, I mean, the list. He's done so much for that community, man.
Well, I think if anything...
Do it to draws?
Wow. That's low.
Work the magic.
Oh.
What did you say? I missed it.
I said he needs to work on draws. Is he alive?
No.
He's dead? Yeah. I guess I can work on draws.
He's really good.
The thing about watching the Hall of Fame this year is just to see what's going to happen if Luger's going to walk across the stage or something like that and who inducts him. So that'll probably be the reason why I watch it. He'll probably
literally never watch it.
I watch it every year. Thunderbolt Patterson was crazy last year. They just kept going on and on and on. It's like they hadn't given the microphone for 40 years, and he had a bunch of stuff to talk about, though.
I wonder if the tickets are going to be like $2,000.
Yeah, they're stupid expensive.
Thomas, speaking of things to talk about, let's get into some shitty picks.
All righty. Tom Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, located at 244 Brock Street South. In Whitby, Ontario, everything is brewed in-house, including their hard iced teas, their beers, vodka sodas, and their hard seltzers. So if you're in the Whitby area, go check them out and tell them the 1973 podcast sent you. So
go ahead, Tom.
Just quick pick. My final four, I've got three out of the four still alive. Baseball starts this week, so I'm just going to throw out a couple of Cy Young predictions. I'm going all homer on this one. For the American League, I'm going Garrett Crochet. I think he's going to do phenomenal with the Sox. I think he'll lead the league in strikeouts. And National League, I think Pittsburgh's going to finally take the training wheels off of Paul Skeens and let him actually pitch more than five innings and keep him off a pitch count, hopefully. And I think he'll walk away with the NL Cy Young.
Well, Ed, after we went off the air last week, we were talking about the week of kids sports and tryouts. And I wanted him to bring up his question that he had for the panel about youth sports. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I brought up the point of, you know, like, because you guys were all talking about hockey tryouts and everything like that. And, you know, what kind of toll does it take on everybody? And what kind of ugly heads rear themselves during the tryouts and that type of thing? And last but certainly not least, is the amount of money that these youth sports for all these kind of all-star teams are costing everybody. And, you know, and then things that I've said before, I mean, really? Are these kids that are, you know, under 12, are they really that good? And do they really need to be spending that type of money on them? And I don't have kids, so I'm going to toss it to you guys.
I don't know how to answer that, Ed. This was one of the most exhausting weeks. I knew going into it was going to be tough, but I didn't realize how tough it was going to be. I got up Saturday morning after it was all done, and I hadn't felt that exhausted all day. It was like jet lag on 10. It was like a little nauseous. Just, I didn't know if I was coming down with something, which it wasn't. It was all stress from that week. I've coached during tryouts. I've evaluated during tryouts. This was the first year that I actually had no skins in the game as far as evaluations or coaching, and I couldn't believe the amount of text messages I got from other people saying, what if, should I do this, should I do that? And I was trying to focus on my own kid, and that was stressing me out because it was recurring text messages. What if this happens? What if that happens? Where should I go here? Should I go there? Should there's one more night where this team's trying out? It was mind blowing. And at all during the same process, I'm jumping here, I'm jumping there, I'm getting an email from this. Here's your offer. We were the Monday night, we went to one, skated at that team that my daughter's currently on, to be named nameless. Going to the second night, nobody knew that we went somewhere else. Who do I run into? People from her other team. So now I know the cat's out of the bag, that we were already fishing, but I was using it as a what if. What if it didn't happen? Just a backup plan, so you weren't on the outside looking in. Didn't talk to anybody, but it's still getting text messages from other parents about their kid with other things. My just asking me in my opinion. So I go to night three back at the original team that she's on now. I got this. I get a blast right there with an email. They must have known that I went somewhere else. They're trying to get her locked up before we go anywhere else past Wednesday. The coaches, now they're evaluating. I'm standing with all the parents that are on my daughter's team. When that blast went out, a bunch of other kids got the blast all at the same time to make the top tier team. There were like two parents that were on my daughter's team that were standing there, tears in their eyes when they didn't get it. And I'm standing there going, oh man, this is awkward. With my phone ringing right there of the coach that's doing the evaluating, saying, are you in? We need to know you're in. Are you in? Because if not, I got these other two that are hanging on, which are standing right next to me, almost in tears that their kid didn't make that team. And I'm like, I can't take this phone call right now. And then I get the text message. Are you here? I just called you. Yeah, I'm here, but I'm with the two people that they're so upset that their kid is not on the team. And I'm like, this is so awkward. I'd rather just be evaluating off to the side, and I can answer my phone if I need to. Like, these kids were, kids' parents were actually devastated. I can just imagine how the kids were. And so it was like the darkest, like, part of my week, just seeing how it affects other people through osmosis, where you're not, your kid's already all set, but I'm getting the, we need to know right now, because if not, I got two other people waiting. Yeah, the two people that I'm standing next to that don't know whether to flip out or start crying. And it was the most awkward thing. And then didn't sign nothing, walked out of there, went to another tryout for the other team. Then they're hammering me over there. Well, what the hell's going on? Do you want to be on this team or you don't want to be on this team? But I'm like, this is way too much. It was just way too much. So just for the hell of it, I just said, I'm in with the original team just to stay. I know what I'm doing. I know where I'm going. I know the culture. They were the first offer, the best offer. So just And then the whole time, my daughter doesn't know any of the stuff that's going on. I did not tell her nothing. Kept it all to myself. So even after the fact, and when I told her, hey, this team's going to be different. There's going to be a couple of the girls that you like are not going to be on the team. It was like the, huh? Really? Huh? I said, you just gotta go where this is. And I'm like, this is so bizarre world to me. So I'm just glad it's done this year and on to a new season already. Freaking, they're already putting blasts out for tournaments and all this other stuff. So, Phantom, thoughts?
I was gonna, just listening to what you were saying, and just to give Ed a little bit of perspective, I coached and had to evaluate this level that Andy's talking about. And the hard part about it is when you're coaching it, this is supposed to be like next level teams, like the best make the team,
right?
The bottom falls off. Like this isn't like a town team,
right?
So if you have your town teams where anybody that tries out, they'll find a spot for the kid to play. Like usually there should be, you know, a spot for everybody, whether they have three teams or two teams or how many they need, however the numbers shake out. When you're coaching these teams, now you say you got to try out. You have your team that you coached the year before. So now say you are sub 500. Now you're getting heat from your parents because they're investing all this money in the thousands of dollars, not $2,000, not some $3,000, $4,000 to be on these teams. They want to be on competitive teams. I've been removed for a couple of years, Andy. I don't get the big bucks yet. But my odds was like $3,000 or $4,000 a year. So now you're putting together this team, and you look at your team from last year. So you got your, say, like five kids that are like 100% they're coming back. Now you got your tweeners. Now you got the kids at the tryouts that you've never seen before, but some of them are really, really good. So you can only offer, say, 13 to the 15, they call them contracts, to the kids' parents of who you want to bring back. But now from, say, that 14 spot down to, like, maybe 20, they're like, one of those kids says no, then the 14th now is now into the 13th spot, and they move up. So it's so hard because you want to be loyal, but if you're too loyal, you're going to lose off all your good kids because they're all your good kids are like their parents don't care. They're already asking you before they sign, like, hey, is this kid going to be on the team? Like they start picking on the kids that are the bad kids, great families, kids, even the kids, they might not even be that bad. They're just like, they don't, the kids that have the really good kids, they get that elitist attitude that they want their kid to be out there all the time, all situations, and they want to shit on the backside. But if they leave your team to go to a better team, now all of a sudden their kid becomes the kid that they're talking about on, say, another, like on a high-end team. So it's just like a wild, wild week of. And the thing that's funny too is all these teams do their tryouts in the same week intentionally so that you can only be at so many places at one time. And it's a shit show.
And I guess I'm going to ask both of you guys this, since we're dealing pretty much with hockey. I mean, how are you evaluating these kids, you know, during the tryouts and that type of thing? Because, I mean, if you're just using cones, or are you actually playing like more scrimmages and you actually do
more? It's more scrimmage based.
Okay.
They might have like one skills day and another day, like some kind of a scrimmage, but it's tough too because like the team that I was coaching for, they used to make the kids that are already on the team. So it'd almost be like on one of our practice nights. So say you already got 13 kids on the team. They might not even all be trying out there. Some of them might be leaving, right? But they just want to give the appearance of a lot of kids being there so that if you get a kid to come in that doesn't know anybody, like, if there's a kid that's already on your team, why you got them trying out? They're just going to take puck touches away from the kids that you want to evaluate. Right. I'd rather have all the kids that, like, you know they're already on the team, tell them don't even show up, you're already on the team. But they don't like to do it that way. And the thing that's messed up is they still charge you for the tryout fee even though you're already on the team. Kind of messed up because the coach has already given the contracts before the tryouts even come. So you could be dropping $75 for a tryout or more, $100 to try out for this team, and the team's already full. There's not even a spot on the team.
You're paying to try out?
Oh yes.
You're paying. Yeah.
Paying to try out.
You're yep. paying to try out. Wow.
Brad, you want to add anything?
No, I mean that's a tough spot, dude. Like, I get where you're coming from. Like, I wouldn't be opposed. Like, if Lucas balled out and somebody was like, "Hey, your kid's good, but he could be great on our team," I'd be like, "Really?" You know, yeah. Regardless of how much it costs to play him. The hard part is the relationships that we have with the other parents, you know, and the friends that Lucas made, you know, it'd be hard to leave that, you know, regardless of a tryout. But to that point though, it's like, once you top out, if your kid's not getting development, you're not doing anybody any favors by staying. Like, you got to move on. Yeah. And I sometimes feel like we're there with Lucas. Some, I don't know. It's hard to say. I feel like Lucas started playing ball. He was kind of the top of his team. And I think he's kind of assimilated into a groove where he's playing down to the level of the kids on the team. But then, like, if we go play rec ball, I have rec ball dads right now hitting me up like, "Bro, you guys have tryouts?" I'm like, "Bro, we had tryouts. You missed them. You didn't got to pay for them." That is bullshit, by the way, to pay for a tryout. But when we had tryouts and I was trying to recruit y'all, you all stiffed me and said, "No, you're going to stick with rec ball." Then they get to rec ball and they're like, "Oh man, this kind of sucks. It's daddy ball and we don't practice and the coach's kid gets all the looks and we don't care how much it costs. We want to come play for your team now." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, dude. The season started, you know." But I don't know, man. I don't envy your position at all, Andy. Not one bit.
My play once my kids got good was I didn't go to the tryouts and I would wait until after the tryouts, and then you just, "Hey, my kids look for a team," and they are the kids that are good. They already know the ones that are good.
Damn.
Then you go. Then you walk right on the team. You don't pay none of the fees.
That's a power move, dude.
It gets a little bit more like that when the kids get older.
Yeah.
Now you got the coaches calling you saying, "Hey, who's he playing for?" I'm like, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Oh, and then you wait till after and you go, "All right. Yeah."
They call you. That's the move.
It was a little bit, not so much with the hockey. The hockey's tough.
Yeah.
You got kids from pooling from all over the state, even out of state. Mm-hmm. Baseball. Even on the travel teams, most of the kids on our team are from like three towns like around us. We're not grabbing kids from all over the place. So the baseball was a little easier to navigate. Didn't have to pay for the tryouts, but way more politics I found in the baseball than the because everybody knows somebody. So it's a little different.
Bro. Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
a lot of shot stops and kids batting cleanup.
Yeah.
So yeah, every year during the process, we'll have to retouch during this week, and I can vent on the journey.
Andy, I can tell you right now that your story already has a better rating for me than Long Legs.
it's a drama that pulls you in.
Yeah. Hey, that stuff goes both ways too. Sometimes you go to this tryout, kid, things look good. Thought your kid was one of the better kids. Coach calls you like, "Hey, dude, I need to know by tomorrow. We only you got the last spot." Oh boy, then you go home. You're like, "Oh, we got the last spot. Like, what are we gonna do?" And then you're like, "Hey, $4,000, kind of a lot of money." All right, so now you buy in. Then it's like 2 weeks later, you have your first practice, and there's like eight kids there, and you're like, "Hey, where's the rest of the kids? Oh, they got lacrosse, they got baseball." Then you go into the season. There's only 11 kids on the team, so you're gonna be bamboozled for your $4,000, and the team stinks on top of it.
Yeah, dude.
The coach that told you he played in the pros, and when you watch him skate, you're like, "Dude, I skate better than you do."
You guys want to quick touch on the passing of boxing legend George Foreman? I'm sorry. Ed?
I mean, you know, it's sad to see and hear about it. And, you know, I never realized, you know, how good of a boxer he really was. I didn't realize that. I did not know until I did a little bit of background research that he actually was in the Olympics. That I didn't know. And, you know, two-time world champion, heavyweight. And I think that, who was it? I think it was Ali said, you know, when he hit so hard, I felt like I was going to lose my teeth. I mean, and didn't realize that he was the $300 million man. And, you know, I also didn't know that he was a minister either. So, you know, sad to see, you know, somebody from our childhood, you know, pass away for sure.
I'll have to definitely throw the legend tag on George Foreman because he had a resurgence too, you know, like a second coming out of retirement. And, you know, he was a pop culture kind of guy for a little while there. Thomas, want to add anything?
Yeah, I didn't realize that he had like an 87% knockout rate in his fights. I mean, he had 76 wins, and I think 68 were by KO. So he had some power in those hands. But the funny thing is the 6 degrees of separation for him, one of his sons for about 2 years lived about five houses down the road from my mother-in-law. And she said she never met him, but she said the family was the nicest family you could ever hope for as a neighbor.
Phantom, George Foreman.
George Foreman and all his kids all named George.
And a grill.
Oh, the grill's the best part. I'll jump on that. But the thing that's funny about George Foreman, when he had that resurgence when he was older, when he won the titles after the fact, where he had left boxing for a while, is that you find out how mean he was in his early days until like later on. He's almost like like maybe like Charles Barkley. Like Charles Barkley when he played,
yep.
Mean, like fight, dirty. And now he's like somebody's grandpa. Like when he's on TV, he's all jokes. And George Foreman was kind of the same way. Then the stuff with the grill. Everybody had that grill. that grill, no on and off switch. That thing was, you plugged it in and it was on. There were only one setting. You couldn't be like, I want this hot, I want it cool. That's a fine piece of machinery right there.
He signed it for $140 million for that.
Crazy. Hey, do you know that Hulk Hogan turned that down before he got it?
I did not know that.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. According to Hogan, he could have had the grill before George.
Yeah, so, allegedly.
Take that as you will.
Yes.
That's a big-time loss as far as boxing goes.
Bradford, the George Foreman grill. From a culinary artist like yourself,
hey, he might have only had an 87% knockout rate in the ring. He had 100% knockout rate in our hearts with those paninis. The George Foreman grill will go down in his. I can't even imagine it being a Hulk Hogan grill. That don't even ring. The George Foreman grill, that probably, when I moved out of the dorms in the Air Force Base, the first thing I did, straight to the store to buy Foreman. That's my first single man's purchase. I think all of us, that was probably in our top 10 of like the first thing we bought when we moved out. Even in the dorms, you could use it in the dorms. I think my buddy Johnson used to cook hot dogs and stuff on his, and then he'd unplug it and, you know, hide it away in the, because we weren't allowed to have cooktops and stuff like that in the Air Force dorms. But yeah, man, George Foreman, RIP, buddy.
Gotta put that thing on a good lean so you get that good grease release.
Yep.
with the trap, the grease trap. So let's move away from talking sports this week. RIP George Foreman from the youth. Get into some tinfoil hat. But first, Thomas, I'm going to put on the tinfoil hat. We'll go to the Outer Limits with some W energy. So let's go.
Sure. The 1973 podcast is fueled by W Energy, but it wasn't always this way. W Energy was born from humble beginnings, an idea sparked in a small apartment when their founder, Anthony, set out to take on the energy drink giants, aka Big Energy. After trying a big-name competitor's product and being disappointed by the taste and poor quality ingredients, Anthony knew he could do better, so he dove deep into formulation, mastering ingredients, flavors, and performance to create an energy drink that works without the jitters, crashes, sugars, artificial dyes, or calories. Dubby launched with just one flavor and reinvested every penny to grow. Now, They've crafted 15 plus custom-made flavors enjoyed by thousands of loyal customers every month. So are you ready to break free from Big Energy? Go to www.w.gg and use the code 1973podcast at the checkout for 10% off your order. W Energy, no jitters, no crass, just pure focus. Now back to the 73 podcast.
All right, Bradford, time to get that tinfoil on and let's talk some, I hope, pyramids this week.
Oh, yeah. So, Dubby, I tried the energy mix compound, compared it to their ingredient list versus Celsius. Basically the same stuff, except Celsius loads their drink up with a bunch of vitamins and minerals. Dubby doesn't do that. But when you drink it, it's not a pre-workout. I found that out the hard way. It's kind of a slow roll energy boost throughout your morning. But it does the job. It's 150 milligrams of caffeine versus Celsius. Some of the other brands are like at 200. Definitely free of jitters, stuff like that. I don't know. I like it, man. I'll use that. One day I'll have a W, one day I have a Celsius. I mix them up. And they make hydration, which I have in this right now. It's not just plain water. They make hydration packets you put in there. So I've been drinking on that all day. Anyway, so did you hit the screen share thing?
I did.
All right, cool. So I just want to bring up really quick. We don't have to, like, dwell on it. There. Because I want to show this. This is just a Google search, nothing crazy. But you can see here where they use the, I think they use LiDAR imaging to get the eight cylinders. And the pyramid right here is the one behind the Sphinx, is the one that they imaged. It's not the greatest. It's not the biggest one. I think it's the one in the middle. And so this is what the image looks like here when they kind of smooth it out. It's four tubes with a wire that wraps around it going into a cylinder block. Now, each one of these tubes is like 650 meters long. The box, the cube here is 200 meters high. The pyramids themselves, just to put it in perspective, are only at like 150 to 160. So these things are massive. Massive when they go underground. And then inside this pyramid, they found four or five little house structures. And I don't know if you guys, we've talked about it before, how there's pyramids literally all over the world. They're in Alaska. They're in Antarctica. There's a row of pyramids off the coast of Cuba. They're everywhere. They're underwater. They're hidden in jungles. They're in Mexico. They're everywhere. And the biggest conspiracy theory years ago was that the pyramids were made for like producing or transferring like free energy. And so the movie Stargate, if you want to look at predictive programming, they do a real good job of showing how that is done. But back then it was like, oh, that's just a sci-fi movie. That's bullshit. And then like come to find out, they just showed us what we just finally discovered. But they, you know, when did Stargate come out? So really wacky stuff, man. What do you guys think about it? Cause this is like this last couple of years with the aliens in Mexico, the Miami Mall aliens, the pyramid discoveries, like shit is getting wacky out there, man. Really, really wild stuff.
Now, do you feel like
I love this topic. I absolutely love it. I just think that there's so much stuff that is years ago was a conspiracy theory, and now the people that are free thinkers are starting to really give you some robust truth to some of these things that people are like, meh, those people with the tinfoil hat, meh. The, stuff like this, this is stuff that at the time could not be done with just regular everyday Egyptian people timeline. This was done on a grand scale, maybe in a short amount of time, with technology that, whether they want to admit to it or not, cannot be done with slaves. It's just mind-blowing when this stuff comes to the surface. Go ahead, Phantom.
Do you guys lean the way of aliens, or do you go more of lost civilization, apocalypse kind of stuff there, and that's just the ruins left behind?
Neither. Ed, What do you think?
Man, I'm thinking it's kind of like an apocalypse type of thing. Because if you look at some of the craters that they find, especially in like Canada and the Soviet Union and a couple in the desert in the United States, I mean, you know, I mean, that it blotted out the sun for, you know, for 40 years or whatnot. Hard to eat, hard to survive. But there's no sun, you can't eat anything. So, you know, I think it's kind of like more of an apocalypse type of a thing. And so, which turned into a lost civilization, you know, I mean, and, you know, all that lidar that they use down in South America that cuts through the jungle and whatnot. I mean, they're finding cities and that type of thing. And then there was a book called 1491, and some scientists went into the rainforest and they found all these mango trees, and these mango trees were actually spaced out, you know, perfectly between each one of them. Which, and the thing about it is that only farming does that. And so, you know, and so I think that all of this stuff, it really has to do with, it's like a lost civilization that happened, you know.
I think it's so hard to, it's hard to dig that deep in the sand to build something. It's not like digging into dirt. To get that deep in the sand, to do that kind of, I mean, these are structures that you would have a hard time making now. Just how do you cut certain things with like laser precision at a time when there was no such thing as precision and move things of that size with the technology that they had at the time? I mean, you're talking barely having horse pulled carts. They're saying that they dragged all those big stones on rolling logs with logs that they got out of the desert. Well, some of the stones that they used in the pyramids weren't even found in that region.
Like 200 miles away.
Right. It just mind blowing when you look at it. And everything that they want you to see, they'll show you. The stuff that they don't want you to see, you'll never see. You have to figure it out for yourself. So when they show you that somebody walked on the moon in 1969, they showed it to you. That's what they did. If they didn't want you to see the space program, you would have never saw it. So it just makes you wonder when people uncover these things, and it's just a matter of how much of it filters out. And the thing with social media that is a plus is once it goes out there, just like a picture you don't want out there, this is the same thing. It was all over the Joe Rogan podcast the last week or two where they were talking about it, and he was doing some deep dives into it. And that's one of his conspiracy theories that he loves to talk about. And it's just amazing to see the depth that those things were massive to begin with. Just imagine under the ground what you can't see. And they'll never dig around that and show that, but it had to be for a bigger purpose. Thomas, what do you think?
I agree. I think it's a little bit of the best of both of what you guys were saying with lost civilization and alien. I think it was a lost alien civilization, because I agree with you. I don't know how they did that in sand. I mean, I've dug in sand before, and it's to go that far, that deep, it's impossible to do it by hand. You talk about like the moon thing and what they're not showing you. I thought for sure this past week when the space shuttle was coming down, they never show it on TV like that. I thought for sure the conspiracy theorist to me was saying this thing's going to blow up or something. They're showing it. They're going to crash or something, because they never show that stuff on TV. I mean, granted, the two astronauts were stuck up there for 10 months, but I allegedly thought for sure something was going to happen.
Allegedly, right?
She came home with a hair with a tan, and her hair was dyed.
I was going to say maybe some of that stuff was actually exposed when they built it, and now it's now sand covered now. Maybe.
Yeah, there was a meme that's floating around, and this meme came out years. I remember seeing this years ago, but it basically depicts the pyramids as just the tops of these massive obelisks that were buried.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
like, and so, talk back about like the people back. What if the people were giants? Now it's not really so big. Feasible. It's big because we're little.
It's feasible when you look at the timeline of the pyramids of when Jesus walked and then the great flood. A lot of folks think the flood was to wipe out the Nephilim and the giants. And then because you had all that going on, and then you had this time, this era when you had the Greek and Roman gods worshiping giant people with superpowers. You know, each god had some trait that they were known for. That, you know, a lot of folks think the Greek and Roman gods were just the Nephilim, and then the flood was supposed to wipe them out, and then that's what buried all these massive structures in Egypt and whatnot. But you're talking about how precise the construction is on these pyramids to zero in this LIDAR imaging machine that they were using, which I think it was a satellite anyway. But the Great Pyramid, the biggest one, has like this 12 by 12 or 20 by 20 something room, and it is perfect. Angular cuts, precision. Like, we couldn't do that today without laser engraving, laser cutting type of technology, let alone dudes doing that back then with a hammer and a chisel. And you think about like the timeline of when the pyramids were built. Cleopatra lived closer in time to the invention of the iPhone than she did to the construction of the pyramids. So what we think of Egypt isn't even like, you still got a huge gap in history of what we think is Egypt of when those things are actually built. People just think of King Tut, Cleopatra, this like image we have of Egypt that we get from Hollywood. But there's this huge gap, even in that timeline of when these things are actually built. Nobody, no scholar, nobody's ever been able to pinpoint the exact point in time when they were actually built. Nobody freaking knows, man.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's all
to be kind of wild too, is like, you know, we look at it as like, we were just talking about the moon landing. A lot of people think it's bullshit.
100%.
What if there's nothing underneath the pyramids and they're just telling us that it is to get people all wild up now for something else that they're trying to do?
Probably.
You know, all it is scientists found. Oh, okay. But they're not going to dig it up.
You figure if they dig that shit up.
Something that was that epic of like, you're not going to believe what we discovered. They'd be saying like, they could dig around the pyramid without disrupting the actual pyramid.
Nah, destroy them. Dig them up. I don't care if it breaks down an old pyramid, crusty. Dig that shit up. I'm going to see what's underneath the ground.
Then you release the ghost, buddy.
I've seen the Nat Geo. I've seen the books, the pictures. I know what a pyramid is. What's underneath that mug? That's where I want to go.
That's the quote of the week. What's under that mug? That should be on a t-shirt. 1973 podcast. What's under that mug?
What's under that mug? Dig it up.
We need Harrison Ford to do one more of our Raiders. Get underneath there.
So you fellas want to wrap up this podcast for another week? Ed, guy on the couch with the billboard space behind him. What do you got this week for a shout out?
Yeah, nothing.
I knew I could count on you, Ed.
Well, you know, I don't have anything.
Okay. Bradford?
Man, I don't know.
What's under that mug?
What's under that mug? U Sports got me all worked up, man, right now. Great topic. We had a tournament yesterday. The boys played hard, and I don't know what happened. Like, even we were winning, and they just started. They just collapsed. Like, one kid had a meltdown, ooh. And then it just like is a domino effect. And sometimes I just forget that they're nine. You know, we were in the sun. We played three games in a row. We had no breaks. And I'm like, when are we supposed to eat? I was about to pass out. The boys were hangry. They were crying. Everybody had an issue. Everybody had something. I stubbed a toe, got hit with a ball. You name it, dude. It was a mess. I think at one point, every boy was on the bench in the dugout blubbering. And I was like, Jesus Christ, just get out of here.
No, good versus thing you had your W energy to get you through it.
Good thing, man. But I haven't seen a collapse like that since the Falcons blew the Super Bowl to the Patriots, man. Like, it was – we just handed the tournament away. Like, I don't know. It's got me in a tizzy. I don't know how I feel about it right now. I'm still trying to come down from it, so.
Tough week for the fellas this week on the U Sports.
Tough week, man.
Phantom, what do you got?
I had a solid week on the youth sports. Even keel.
he had none.
No tears, no aggravation, no hard car rides home. Fantastic.
Just the life.
I'll shout out the dead people that I might offend when I don't know you're dead.
R.I.P. from the Phantom.
Sorry about that.
All right, Professor, you got last call. Let's go.
Well, I'll take Ed, so I'll do two. First, Darren literally 5 seconds ago just sent me his score for long legs. It's the highest score of the bunch, no surprise. He gave it a 7-6. But my shout-out is to my Uncle Dave. He's been in the VA hospital for about a week. He's not feeling too good, so I'm hoping he feels better and gets home soon.
Let's go, Uncle Dave.
Uncle Dave, let's go, buddy.
So from the fellas on the podcast to everybody in youth sports and everybody that's RIP, and from the Phantom to the graveyard, you dropped the ball on that one, bud.
It's trying to be funny. What are you going to do?